This is PCJ Radio. On shortwave, AM, FM, and the internet, this is PCJ. Yeah! It's now time for the Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Perrone. That's right. Well, it now means it's time for the International Happy Station Show. Hello, everyone. I'm Keith Perron. Now, today's program, we're going to be looking at a very interesting subject. You can call me professor for the next 55 minutes. That's a little bit of a stretch. But we are going to be looking at something absolutely fascinating, and that is history. Now, what is the subject of this history lesson? The subject is Formosa and the Netherlands. Some of you are saying, I know one of those two words, and that word being the Netherlands, of course. What is Formosa? Well, Formosa is the original name of Taiwan that was used up until the 17th century. The Netherlands was in Taiwan from 1642 to 1662 in an official capacity, and had a government set up here. And back then, Formosa was known as Dutch Formosa, and had a company set up, company that is very well known, the Dutch East Indian Trading Company. Now, the Dutch history in Taiwan is a unique one. As you know, there were many other colonies that the Netherlands had. For example, not too far from us here in Taiwan, there was Indonesia, back then was known as the Dutch East Indies. The history of the Dutch East Indies and Dutch Formosa are completely, completely different. Most Indonesians don't talk favorably about the time the Dutch controlled Indonesia, except here in Taiwan. Passed down from generation to generation, people talk about the kindness of the Dutch towards the Aboriginal tribes here it protected against the Han Chinese for the time that they ruled. Yes, you heard me correctly. During that time, the Netherlands was fighting against the Han Chinese to prevent them taking over the island. Well, of course, we know what happened. The Netherlands lost that battle. So the Aboriginal tribes here in Taiwan still have a fond affection for the Dutch. Today we're going to be talking about that and a fascinating book that has just come out from Menho Godhart. Menho Godhart, for the past 8 years, was the head diplomat of the Netherlands here in Taiwan. He was the head of the Netherlands Trade and Investment Office, a.k.a. Embassy. His book, The Real Taiwan and the Real Dutch, is a fascinating read, and it is published in Mandarin, English, and soon to be Japanese. And that is my subject today. The Real Taiwan and the Dutch. Formosa, the Netherlands, and my special guest, Menho Godhart. Let's kick off with a song that, well, anyone of Dutch extraction would know. Mer Toch Tostert, performed by the Dutch 60s folk group, The Shepherds, here on the International Happy Station. Thank you.
rooster nu in het werk zich al stelt. Die al een tijd zo ons vrijheid heeft bestreden. Zie hoe hij slaaf, graaf en draaft met geweld. Om ons goed en ons bloed en onze steden. O, de Spaanse trommel slaan. Hoor maar als trompetten. Zie hoe komt hij trekken aan. Bergen te bezetten. Berg op zon, houd u vroom. Steun de Spaanse
Toestert, performed by The Shepherds. In the early 1600s, when the Dutch arrived here in Taiwan, or as it was known then, Formosa, they were probably greeted by this sound. That is the sound of one of the traditional instruments from the Turku tribe here in Taiwan. I recorded that last week in the mountainous areas outside Taipei, which is an absolutely beautiful village to go and visit. Now, that was probably the first sound that they heard. The piece that they were playing is something that was played by the tribes in the 17th century to welcome outsiders, not just from other tribes from around Taiwan, but also people from outside, you know, places like Europe and the Dutch. So that was probably one of the first things they heard. Now, what about that history? And what is this connection that people here in Taiwan and this affection that they have for the Dutch? And where does that stem from? This is my first question to Menno Gildhardt.
The Taiwanese feel a connection with the Dutch. I feel better to say that the Taiwanese are the kindest people on earth. That's what I believe. And the hospitality everywhere, in the cities, at the countryside, is incredible. And most of them know about Holland. And they know not only about Holland because of the joint history, which is important for Taiwan, but also, as you say, because there are a lot of similarities between Taiwan and the Netherlands. The size is the same, the structure of the economy is the same, the importance of foreign trade is the same, fighting against water is the same, so the Taiwanese see the Holland quite not only on economy but also social matters. They see them as an example. So you're right, there are a lot of similarities.
You know, you just said a moment ago that Taiwan, Holland is the second largest trading partner in Taiwan.
From Europe.
From Europe. What are some of the major areas of trade? Is it agriculture or science and technology?
Well, here you can sell everything. But most is in science and technology, and a big part is, of course, also ASML. In the past it was Philips, but Philips is not so strong anymore because they have the production now, that they transferred that to China. But ASML is the main provider of all the IT miracle and here in Taiwan. So that is a large part of that. But if you see the you can sell everything. Agriculture is growingly important. Maybe it's 150 million euro at the moment, so it is this important, but not that important. Yeah.
Now, you've been here for 8 years. You're retiring very soon, but you have decided to stay here in Taiwan. Why?
Well, if you retire and you have some energy, then you have to do something. Mm-hmm. And here I have some ideas what I can do and make myself useful. Taiwan is as you said before, it's fascinating, and I traveled a lot over in Taiwan, made a lot of friends, became close friends to the indigenous people of Taiwan. Not many people know, and certainly not in the Netherlands, that you have 14 real indigenous tribes, which are Polynesian tribes here in Taiwan. So I'm close to them. And secondly, the Dutch, the VOC, the VOC history, the 17th century Dutch history is quite relevant in Taiwan. And I did a lot of research in Taiwan, and continue to do that. So that's why I want to stay, live in the south, and continue to research on Dutch history and become close and be close to the tribes. Yeah.
What sparked your interest in the Dutch history in Taiwan? I mean, most people, if you tell them, oh, the Dutch in Asia, the first place they automatically think of would be the former Dutch East Indies, now known as Indonesia, but they would never think Taiwan. Taiwan is sort of like, it's just a tiny little island that they would totally ignore. What sparked your interest in this?
In the first place, there is so much. So there's much more here which refers to the Dutch than I ever expected, and much more than is known to the general public. Of course, there are a lot of experts in Holland and professors who know everything about it, but the general public doesn't know. But the interesting is that the Taiwanese themselves are. They know about it, they are interested in it, and they want to know more about that. If you talk about the Dutch colonial times, and you go to Indonesia now, they're mostly, they don't like to talk about it. And that the same is, I think, in India and other places. But here in Taiwan, they like it. It's part of the history, and so it is easy to talk about, to communicate with them, and together you develop this interest, you develop more knowledge. And then it's personal if that is something which you want to continue to work on or not, of course. So, but I liked it very much, but also because of the interactions you have with the local people on those subjects. And that combination is quite attractive. You do your research, you meet people, you have fun, you go to them, you stay with them, you eat the local food with them, and have parties with them. In the meantime, you collect information. That is quite attractive part of life.
You know, you just said that in countries where Holland has a history in Asia, they don't really like to talk about that period of time, like Indonesia or India, but in Holland, in Taiwan, they do. Do you think that could be from the fact that the situation with when Holland was in Taiwan was very different from when they were in Indonesia and India?
There are two reasons. One is that Taiwan, before the Dutch came, Taiwan only had tribes and they only had hunters. So the Dutch started to civilize Taiwan. So the written Taiwanese history starts with the Dutch. And recently, of course, they were more and more interested in they are more and more interested in their own history. There is a political element in that also. Before the Dutch, there were hardly Chinese here. So, I mean, the history starts with the Dutch. Mm-hmm. And the Dutch brought quite some Chinese to Taiwan to become farmers, And so it has an element in our history. It's not totally Chinese. It's we were indigenous, and we got the Dutch, and then we got the Chinese, and then we have, now we have everything. So it is a kind of a, has to do also with an awareness of being Taiwanese, that they are so interested and so open to that.
Mm-hmm. You've written a book called The Real Taiwan and The Real Dutch. What was your inspiration to write it? Is it about the historical facts going into it from when Holland was here and the connection between Holland and the Netherlands, and also some Taiwanese, which you mentioned earlier, have Dutch ancestry?
What I wished to do when I decided to write this book, it was to leave something for Taiwan and for people living here. In the first place, for experts, I thought. Now I think it's even better for the Taiwanese themselves. I went to so many places where nobody normally goes, and where you so easily can stay, meet people, and not only indigenous people in the mountains, but also at the seaside or at the Pescadores, the Penghu Islands. So I thought, well, I know all the places to stay, what to do, what to eat. Put it on paper so that people can enjoy when I after I left, because I did not only last year decided to stay here. And when I decided to put it on paper, then, and started systematically to collect information, then I met so much more people who wished to talk about the Dutch. I went to so many places where referring to the Dutch history, that I said, I include that in the book also. So I put it all together. So now you can, with this book, you can travel to very rural Taiwan, not the major touristic sites. You can stay there, eat the local food, and everywhere you can find out what the Dutch did there. Old battlefields between the Dutch and tribes, for instance, I have been there. And so that is, but the starting point was, I like Taiwan so much, so let other people experience the same, put it together. And only after that, the element of the Dutch history I added, because it was so much and so linked to all those places.
Kau yang
song is called Puyu Ma, and the singer is one of Taiwan's most famous Aboriginal singers, San Ming Gad. The next question I had for him is, doing the research to write this book, The Real Taiwan and the Dutch, there must have been some surprises along the way. And what were they exactly?
It's difficult to select because there are quite a few which are interesting. But what I like very much is that we not discovered, but we became aware of two fortifications of the Dutch. The first one was on Peng Hu, the Pescadores. The very first Dutch fort was there and was built in 1622. Nobody realized that where it was, but we found it, and then we got money to remove all the plants and the cactus, and now it made it a touristic site there. And that was the first. The second one is that we found the location of the Fort Vlissingen and the third fort in Taiwan. And that was an important fort, a little bit north of the main, as I say, the capital for the Dutch. And there are very interesting stories in that fort also, which now I know, and I also published in my book. But it's amazing that you find people with Dutch looks at so many places here in Taiwan.
Not just surprising to me, but also I think to a lot of people that are listening to this right now, to think that you will have Taiwanese people that could have blonde hair and blue eyes. Because you were just telling me how common is it in the areas that the Dutch were? I mean, how much of, say, Dutch ancestry or DNA is going through their, you know, is part of their person?
I've found six of the tribes where there were interactions with the Dutch, physical interactions with the Dutch, so where there's some Dutch DNA. And one of the tribes is really proud of that. The Tso tribe, high up in the mountains in Alishan, which is in center Taiwan, they are proud of that, and they claim, and you can see that they have a lot of Dutch DNA. They have a lot of stories about the interaction. The tribes don't know, they couldn't write. So all the stories they tell from father to son. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the stories are about the Dutch. But there in the tribe you can see a lot of people with the same big nose as I have. And I have seen people with blonde hair and pretty light eyes, of which all the other family members, kids, parents, are just normal Taiwanese. So I've seen there are pictures of them, yeah.
For researching this, what kind of work goes into it, and how well are the records kept, not just here in Taiwan, but also in the Netherlands? Because sometimes when historians will research a certain period of time, there's sometimes bits and pieces missing from the puzzle. Is this sort of the case, like Taiwan has some information, the Netherlands has some information, and then you try to have to sort through it and combine it together to find out the facts?
No. There is a lot of information in the Netherlands, and a famous professor who is the most knowledgeable person about that, Professor Blusset from Leiden University, he wrote marvelous books on that. So the information is almost complete from the Dutch side, and even translated through Taiwanese professors in Mandarin. So there's a huge effort they did already. So there are no loopholes. No, the Dutch archives are complete. And quite a lot is put into books, which English language books. Of course, the archives are in old Dutch, and a lot has been translated in Mandarin. So there are many professors in the Netherlands and in Taiwan who have knowledge about all that. What I do, or I did, and what I will do in the future, is to register what you can still experience in Taiwan now. Because on the history, everything is already, people know. So I am trying to locate all the places where the Dutch were. And with all those professors in Taiwan and in the Netherlands, they can check if the stories I hear and what I find, if it is true. So the databases in the Netherlands and the knowledge of the professors is available for me to find out what we can still find here. But there are no loopholes, I think, in the knowledge about on the history. I went to the mountains. I went to the tribe to find out about the Dutch. And I had an extremely good chemistry with a princess of the tribe. We couldn't stop talking. And she had also from her ancestors claims to have Dutch DNA. But in the beginning of the 20th century, that's around 1900, they claim that a Dutchman came to the tribe also, and that Dutchman became also a chieftain of the tribe. I've seen the pictures, and the picture is not referring to a real Dutchman, but to someone, I think, from Indonesia. So someone with Dutch blood who came. So they had a pretty recent history. An exchange with the Dutch, so they were very open to see Dutch and to meet Dutch and to talk about that. That they asked me to become a chieftain was basically to promote the tribe. This is one of the poorest tribes in Taiwan, living very remote areas, and they don't have many people who could lobby for them. So I gave them publicity by doing that, by helping that. That's how it started.
But almost like an official spokesman.
But yes, that was basically the idea, but now it's totally different because, you know, we had this terrible Typhoon Morakot disaster. So after half a year, all my tribe's members in 8 villages, they were evacuated. Nobody could live in the house. And the place where my wife and I were made chieftains following a centuries old ceremony, that place does no longer exist because of Morakot. The landslides and the hill collapsed, and so it's no longer there. So this tribe is, after Morakot, after the typhoon disaster, this was desperate. They lost everything. So since then, my role is to help them. So since August, I do a lot of charity programs for the tribe and bring them. The beginning, I brought them all kind of things they needed in the evacuation camps. And now we are working. We are building new villages, and I work them to our employment projects. And instead of, let's say, being PR for PR for the tribe, I have something to do now. So it changed totally, and it's quite touching also, I can assure you, because if people lose everything, then then really you cannot leave them alone anymore. No.
That's Menho Goodhart, who was Holland's representative here in Taiwan for 8 years. He is my special guest on this edition of the International Happy Station. We're now going to take a listen to something rather odd. It is actually, in fact, a traditional Aboriginal song from here in Taiwan, but it's performed by a group that was very well known in the early 1970s and late 1960s called the Stylers. They were sort of a surf garage band that made their popularity from taking traditional Taiwan Aboriginal folk songs and playing them in a rock and roll fashion. Here they are with one of them right now.
Thank you.
the very popular 1960s, 1970s group, the Stylers, from here in Taiwan. In fact, two of the members of the group are Aboriginal. My special guest on today's edition of the International Happy Station is Menno Goethart, who was the Dutch representative here in Taiwan for 8 years. He also just wrote a book called The Real Taiwan and the Dutch, which is a fascinating history about all the places that you can visit that are Aboriginal communities with a bit of a Dutch flavor. My next question to Menno was, what about in the Netherlands? What do people know about the Dutch history in Taiwan?
I at school never learned about it. So it is amongst coolers. But you can even broaden your question. Who in Holland knows about Taiwan? What information about Taiwan you can get in Holland? So that applies also to business. I think the Dutch trade and industry is ignoring Taiwan much too much. It's lack of knowledge or lack of interest to get to know it. And there's a lot of business here, certainly now, because with the direct links with China, you can do your business in China through Taiwan. So in general, there is not much information about Taiwan available to the general public. Mm-hmm. So I try to help a little bit, and that's why we have this interview now.
Do you think that the more, you say, for example, you talk about it, the more you write about it, the more you research it, that people in Holland, do you think people in Holland are genuinely interested in this part of the history?
No, but specialized. I mean, for the general public, they will not come here for tourism. They go to the beach resorts in Thailand or they go to Bali. But there are people who are very interested in history, and they now will come to Taiwan. So that will not be huge groups, but there is definitely interest in that. What I hope is because of this is that also businessmen, notably businessmen, start to consider to pay attention to Taiwan for their own benefits.
Something that I've heard is that people here in Taiwan know more about the Dutch presence in Taiwan than people in Holland do.
That is definitely true. Mm-hmm. So also logic, I would say.
Now your book, The Real Taiwan, The Real Dutch. You mentioned that this book is predominantly for tourism, to write about places that most people would not go to. What has been the reaction, let's say, from tourism authorities here in Taiwan? I mean, you know, here you are, you're working at the, you have a diplomatic position, and you're writing a book about tourism in Taiwan from a Dutch point of view, which they didn't seem to maybe have thought of. What was the reaction? Did they think, what are you doing?
Amazing. In the beginning, the publicity was, of course, because a foreigner and someone in my position is doing this. But after they read the book, the interest changed totally. And the tourism sector in Taiwan is really interested. So this week I had a meeting again with the highest responsible person in the Ministry of Tourism. And because they use my books, and not only for promoting Taiwan, but also for thinking how to promote Taiwan, because the layout of the way the book is written is totally different from any other tourism book about Taiwan. And they say, probably because you're a foreigner, probably we have to adjust our the way we promote tourism for non-Asian people to Taiwan. So that is the ministry here. But in the counties, they ask me for help also. As the magistrate of Chai County told me, that, and with the whole staff there, said, yes, we make our brochures and we promote our tourism for English-speaking tourists, for non-Asian tourists, by writing about Taiwan as we think that they see Taiwan. But we are wrong, because if I read your book, we do wrong. So she wants me to help them to rewrite all that information.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because something that I have heard quite often, I mean, not just here in Taiwan, but even, for example, in China and other places, sometimes when you're from a place and you're putting together something about, say, tourism or visiting, you have a perspective that is different from maybe somebody who writes it from the outside. Like, quite often, I have met Taiwanese, and I told them about some unique place that I went to, which is absolutely fascinating, that they knew nothing about.
That is true, but that's why I wrote my book in English, about English, but we printed much more in Mandarin. And by the way, it will be translated in Japanese now also. But the Taiwanese don't know about that. That is also. So the book is also very useful, and maybe more useful even for the Taiwanese. But the main amazing thing is that they really, this book is different, and that people like that. I even get fan mail, I swear. I get emails from people who read the book and say, wow, and this is different. And so it is, apparently, I just wrote the book because I wish to do that, because I liked it. But it's definitely a book that got some impact.
What has been the reaction from your friends and family in the Netherlands when you said, well, when I retire, I'm coming back for a few months, but I'm moving back to Taiwan?
Well, I'm happy with this question, the way you pose it. You could also have asked what was the reaction of your title, of your wife.
your wife as well.
Because that was quite... We intended to go back to Holland to our kids, and we have a granddaughter and family and friends, and then also and probably to live in France. That was the planning, but I didn't know what to do there, and that's why I wished to stay. Quite a number of friends said, and that's what we expected, this, because we know how you love Taiwan and how you like it there. Our kids do not like it. They would like to have us back to Holland. But at the other hand, what we plan to do is to live 9 months in Taiwan and 3 months in Holland. So that's quite balanced. And with Skype and cameras on your computer, and we have our contacts. But quite frankly, our children were disappointed that we made this decision. Friends were not so surprised. And my mom, I have a mom, is 98 years old, still living alone. On her own, and she said, "Of course, I never expected you to come back." so that is,
Menno Goethart. If you want more information about his book, The Real Taiwan and the Dutch, Traveling Notes from the Netherlands Representative in Taiwan, you can check out TP Publishing. The website is www.tipi.com.tw. That's www.tipi.com.tw. We are giving away a copy of this book. We only have one copy. So if you send us an email to pcj.happystation@gmail.com, that's pcj.happystation@gmail.com. We'll have a lucky draw for this book in the month of September. Pretty soon you'll find out the details on the pcjmedia.com website. That's pcjmedia.com. On the website, all the details will be there about the book. Speaking about our website, by the way, as you know, we had a poll running not too long ago. What does what does PCJ stand for? And we gave the results. Of course, the results were kind of funny because some of the answers were also a little bit silly. But we have a new poll running right now. One that, well, you can make the choice in deciding what you want to hear on the air. It's very, very, very simple. The new poll question is, what Happy Station Show interview would you like to hear again? Again, what Happy Station Show interview would you like to hear again? The choices are, number one, Johnny Mann, number two, Helen Shapiro, number three, Frank Ifield, who was actually the very first interview that we did on the program, Tom Meyer, number four, number five, Steve Lawrence, number six, Velisili Stralnikov from the old Radio Moscow World Service, number seven, Dodie Cowan, number eight, Dick Van Patten, number nine, Ian McFarland, number 10, Pete Myers, Number 11, The Ham Band. And number 12, Bob Zanotti. So go to our webpage, www.pcjmedia.com, and you'll find it on the right. And while you're there, you'll notice a slight change to the right side. It says, on air, with a picture of a radio, and then underneath, listen now. This is our own stream, not the one from Live 365, which is just a rotation of our shows 24 hours a 7. But this is our own stream, which we're going to be testing out over the next few weeks. In fact, we actually have a schedule that you can find at our website for the weekends, just for the short term, until we get all the bugs worked out. But do check it out, click on it, and have a good listen. And all the shows, by the way, are running hourly for usually a three-hour block. Sometimes you'll hear different things. You'll hear some test signals going out because we're trying to make the stream available to everyone and try to using the best bit rate possible. So there are some little hiccups every now and again. All right, time for more music. We began with a song from Holland today, and our last piece of music will also be a song from the Netherlands. The singer's name is Ronnie Tober. Here he is with Naar Nederland on the International Happy Station.
Ik zie een boot ver op het water. Niemand weet waarheen hij zal gaan. Vol op stoom, de tijd vliegt, het wordt alsmaar later. Er wordt op hem gewacht, hier heel ver vandaan. En in zijn hut leest hij de namen. Ieder kind, daar schrijft hij iets bij. Binnenkort, dan komen ze allen tezamen. Want 5 december wacht, dat maakt hem blij.
Er zijn zoveel erinneringen.
Naar Nederland, there performed by Ronnie Tober. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of the International Happy Station Show. There's many people that I want to thank, but there's one person in particular that I want to thank for all his work, hard work, I should say, at PCJ, and that is our own Colin Newell, who runs the website dxr.ca. Check them out, www.dxr.ca. And Colin, thank you very, very much for all your work this past week. All right, next week's program is going to be another interesting one because this show will not be done in the studio. It will be done on the road and on the train and somewhere in the mountains outside Taipei. Yes. I decided that while I go on vacation, I'll bring a microphone with me and record the show there. Instead of doing, you know, a pre-packaged, what would happen if I got hit by a cow program. Yes, so tune in next week. That show should be fun as well. Once again, our email address, if you want to get in touch with us, is pcj.happystation@gmail.com. That's pcj.happystation@gmail.com. And remember to mention the book, The Real Taiwan and the Dutch, that we are giving away, and you can win a copy of that. Our website to listen to all the Happy Station shows and all the other programs from PCJ Media is very simple. It's www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. Now, as you know, for the past couple of weeks, instead of ending with the national anthem of the ROC, we have been ending with the national anthem of the Netherlands, which Tom and Eddie Starts did for many years. There is a reason for that. There is a clue behind that. And I'm not going to tell you what the clue is yet. You just have to keep guessing. So, until next time, friends, this is Keith Perron in Taipei, Taiwan, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.